welcome to episode 344 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Megan, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
Joey?
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at, I almost just said, hey, dude, Mike. At JoeyMoser83. And the dripping sound you may hear throughout this podcast is my air conditioner that's right above my desk because I have a bucket that's leaking and now I have a bucket on my desk.
Oh. Glad to know that that's what that noise is. No, I didn't hear it at all.
Slowly peeing for the next 45 minutes. That's what it is.
Oh, my God.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So who was it that laughed at me during the middle of my opening?
It wasn't me.
That was probably Joey. Me.
Did you laugh?
I did laugh though when I thought when you were saying the number, it sounded like you were like, I don't know what number it is.
I couldn't get to
I thought it was funny.
I couldn't get to my script fast enough.
I like how, I thought it was just like, oh, but I like how you're accusatory, like, who laughed at me?
You're off the podcast.
Yeah.
So hopefully you guys are doing well. We haven't talked lately.
Yeah, it was a crazy week. Yeah. It was a crazy busy week.
And then all of a sudden I wake up on Thursday and I'm like, oh, it's Emmy voting day.
Yes.
Little Emmy birds started fluttering outside my window. I'm
like, that's awesome.
Hey, Emmy.
I love that.
But speaking of Ted Lasso, we're going to talk a little bit about season two. How's this for a segue? This was completely unintentional, but we're going to talk a little bit about season two, not necessarily the season itself, but the reaction to the season. And then, of course, you know, inevitably we'll talk about the season and its merits. But our main topic this week is our annual TV Academy Hear Our Plea segment, where we basically talk about what we really want the Television Academy to focus on as they cast their ballots before just blindly going with what the popular shows are, just really kind of deep dive into some specific things that we love that we want people to consider before they cast their final ballots. And of course, we'll end things with the flash forward to the media you're most anticipating the upcoming week. You guys ready?
Yeah.
So, you know, full disclosure, We started talking about this topic just as a casual sort of warming up exercise, kind of just finding out how everybody was doing. And Megan brought this up, and I think we had such a great conversation. We're going to try to recreate that conversation. So, Megan, why don't you kick us off with the Ted Lasso segment and how this came into your purview?
So I saw that people were talking about on Twitter that there was some rumblings about Ted Lasso. People were debating whether season two was good or not. And then I saw that this stemmed from a thread, which was from Daniel Radish, who's a writer at The Daily Show. And it was how Ted Lasso lost the thread. And it has the thread. And he goes off saying that, like, nothing is happening and that there's no real conflict. And everybody has become Ted Lasso. I saw some people saying that like all of the characters are like they are accepting of him now and everything. And it was just a critique of that. And Bill Lawrence, one of the showrunners of the show, actually saw it and responded and said, like, ugh, like I appreciate you have an opinion on the show, but this really hurt for some reason. And I'm not sure why. But he also said, you know, this has to be reminiscent of whenever The Daily Show moved from John to Trevor and how people weren't really up on that transition at first either. And kind of threw it back at him, which I thought was smart because, you know, that is what happened. And now everybody likes Trevor Noah. But at first it was like, oh, it's not the same. But it was just, it was interesting because I started thinking, I mean, I've been watching it week to week, Ted Lasso, even though I do have screeners, but because I've been, one, I haven't had time, and two, I have been enjoying just, you know, sitting with episodes. But I really have enjoyed season two because I think it feels more realistic is something I realized. Whereas the stakes were so high in the first one where, you know, Ted Lasso gets plucked out of obscurity in Missouri and moves to the UK and there's so much going on. But this one feels very like a lived in season where this is how these characters would be. But apparently that's not how everybody feels. But that's what we were talking about.
Well, the second season is a bit of a warm hug, and I think Joey, you had mentioned that too, because that's in some reactions that have come out that have driven you personally insane. But it's a happy show, like, and I think people just they're so accustomed to and engineered lately by I don't know if it's social media, I don't know if it's the news, but they just want they're just unhappy if there's no conflict, I think. Like, and this show is the antithesis of that. This show is a happy smile. It is, you know, just it's just a pure joy to watch it to me because it doesn't have artificial conflict in it. It is character driven and it is getting to know these people and spending time with these people. And you know, that's to me, that's the joy of the first season. It wasn't the fish out of water story, which has been done.
I didn't care if they won
times.
Either, too.
Right.
Like, I didn't care if they won.
Right.
I don't watch this show because of soccer. Jesus Christ. Like.
I do think that, you know, God forbid we don't have a sort of, you know, super dramatic conflict or something like that. I mean, the thing is, like, this is something that Clarence said. Before we started recording that it was just he said something about, you know, Schitt's Creek didn't really have to face any backlash because it sort of like ended on that tidal wave high. And like it, like sort of the Emmys were sort of the icing on the cake for that. Whereas like people that are kind of starting to complain or have a reason to complain about it, it was just like Schitt's Creek is a character driven comedy.
Yeah.
Like it's the main, I mean, I would argue that the main plot and arc of that show is just the arc of the characters. They enter, you know, obviously situations, but you know, God forbid everything's not, just because it's plot driven doesn't mean it's slouching. Or I think the reason why people love Ted Lasso so much is the characters are so rich and the actors are very, you know, the actors bring a lot of stuff to whatever it is on the page. So.
Right.
Everyone calm the fuck down.
This guy's entitled to his opinion, but it was just but the thread was just very like, I don't know. It felt like he didn't get the point of the first season to me is that like, you know, of course the first season is going to be different. The stakes are going to be higher because we're meeting these characters. It always is like that with any season. But I just felt like, are you watching this show because you want to find out if they're going to like, if because of the relegation and because of, like, are you watching it because of the soccer? Like if I could see a lot of dudes doing that. And if you are like, fuck you. No, I'm kidding.
No, I will say fuck you.
I've become Joey. I just told a whole group, like, if you watch this for the soccer, fuck you.
Well,
I expect that from you,
if,
Joey.
If you're the person that if you saw that any trailer for Ted Lasso, it was like, oh, finally something about that little known game is soccer.
Yeah.
Like, shut up. Like, no.
Like, I don't watch Caddyshack because I like golf. Like,
right.
And that's what, and this is a sports comedy. Like, come the fuck on. Like,
it's just, there is a conflict, right? There is a conflict still that is permeated through the entire show. And that is the fact that Ted, you know, as nice as the team is to him at this point, there is no, he doesn't belong there.
No,
like
yeah.
He is not guiding them to some miraculous winning season, you know, and you know, that is apparent in the episodes that have aired, and I'm not giving anything away. I'm not spoiling anything for the rest of the season that I have seen, but you know, he doesn't belong there. And that is the underlying conflict. And it does get into why he is so doggedly, you know, persistent in staying in the UK. What is he avoiding? What is he trying to put behind him? That's all there, and that it gradually comes out, but they're doing it in a beautiful way, in a very gradual way, in a very easy way. And it, I think once people see the bulk of the second season, they will come around to where it's been, and they will appreciate the places that it's been.
Also, I wonder if this Daily Show guy realizes that it's a longer season than the last one. I bet he doesn't.
Oh, so we're only 5 episodes into the season.
Yeah.
Right.
Only 5 episodes.
I liked the Christmas. Yeah. I liked the Christmas episode. I thought it was great. I thought the most recent episode was great. It's really setting up things. It's just taking its time and letting us spend time with these characters, which I think is what fans want.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just will say, you can't have Hannah Waddingham be the permanent villain because she changed in the first season. She accepted Ted. So then you can't bring on somebody else that's going to be, you know, the permanent villain. You can't bring, you know, this isn't Desperate Housewives, right? So you can't just have constant mystery.
I saw somebody comment that Hannah Waddingham was apparently like this bitch last season, but this season, you know, she mentions that every year she gives Christmas gifts to kids. But she does say that, oh, I didn't really do it last year. Like, so it kind of implies that she's trying to do it, but like, she doesn't do it every year, but she's trying to be better. And I'm like, that's a nitpicky thing that people are pulling apart, I think. Well, she seems like somebody who was a good person all along.
I fully object to anybody classifying Hannah Waddingham's character, Rebecca, as a bitch in the first season, because she is struggling to cope with a really horrible public divorce and the judgments that are constantly put upon her. I mean, it is, if you just say that she's a bitch and then move on, then you're completely missing the point of her character and what she's going through. And I would argue that you're not really engaged in the show, that maybe you are there for the soccer.
Well, also,
poor Ted and this mean lady. That actually, just hearing you like just say that makes me so mad. I was like, how do you not understand like the hurt of that character? Also, how do you not see that?
And you also see how like Ted and Hannah are both going through Ted and Rebecca are both going through divorces and how people handle things differently. And I think that's really interesting too, that she's, you know, dealing with it and, you know, not dealing with it well and hurting others in the process, including herself in a way. And he's not dealing with it well either, but he's pretending like he is.
Right.
You know?
You know how I don't have a lot of experience hearing this, but with firsthand experience of this, but I know in sports you play a long game with certain stuff, and God forbid.
Oh my God, Joey's making a sports analogy.
Wow, what is going on? We switched places literally after you said my Twitter handle. We have switched places. I'm telling people.
Oh my God, I'm just here.
And you are making sports analogies.
It's Freaky Friday.
What's going on?
I said the phrase long game and did not giggle. So there's like, it's like, Jesus, I don't know. There are certain things, and this is the thing I got mad at before. There's just sort of just like, some people throw their opinions up on Twitter about every tiny minute thing. And I was like, I don't care. Nobody cares. And it's just sort of like, whether it's against the show or for the show. Like, I love the show so much. Everything you guys say, I echo that too. I have said like the show is just like a warm hug. But if you are comparing it to a different snuggly thing every week, just because you feel like you need to put it out in the universe, like, oh my God, Ted Lasso's like the teddy bear that I lost when I was 5. Like, shut up. Like, I don't, oh my God, it warms me. Oh my God, it drives me insane. I just want everyone to like what they like. Don't be afraid of shit, and then say a condensed version of why they liked it, and just not like go on and on and on about something just because they want people to interact with them. There, the end.
So yes. Freaky Friday is over, and you're back to being yourself, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where's the clapping? I don't hear the clapping.
Oh my God. Stupid. Oh my God, I love Ted Lasso. It's such a snuggly sweater of a show. Oh,
you know, it's
hot cocoa.
People cannot like the show. That's fine. People can love it. That's fine too. You know, it just.
We started recording at a very, very bitchy moment.
I just think it's like
bitchy, it's just annoying.
Yeah, it's like, here's the thing. I don't like. I think it's mean to go after all the, like, and say, sorry, guys, you need to realize it sucks. Because, like, it's like me, who was not a fan of Harry Potter, like, going around saying, I watched the show and I watched the movie and I hated it. And here's why it sucks. I don't know. It just was like, let people have what they like to do.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's like the, yeah. You can't say anything nice.
That's why
Twitter is so evil. Because it encourages hate. It encourages that dissension. It encourages.
Encourages that. I think human beings are just. You put them in any kind of platform. Yes. They're gonna.
It's the mouthpiece. Yeah. But you know, people used to have people have always had these feelings about, you know, somebody didn't like Cheers because nothing happened. You know, I'm sure somebody has said that, but they just didn't have Twitter to go out and you know. Inform their opinion because their opinions are so important. Like, you could also argue, why do we even have a podcast if we don't think that people's opinions are valid? But that's a bit meta and we're not going to go there.
Whoa, I just left my own body.
Anyway, but I would encourage everybody to obviously form your own opinions about season 2 of Ted Lasso. We're all fans of it. And, you know, it is what it is. And once we're done with the 12-episode season, we'll come back to it. We'll revisit it and we will see whether or not it had a point and if it was successful in what it intended to do, or if it was just meandering as some people say. So we'll come back to it.
Sound good?
Awesome. Yeah. Players are just like the second season of Ted Lasso.
So let's jump to the main segment that we had this week, which is our plea to the TV Academy, or TV Academy, hear our plea. And what we're going to do is go around the water cooler. We didn't actually set on a number. So whoever, you know, however many you have, we're going to talk about categories, you know, performances, crafts, series, whatever it is that we think the Television Academy should really seriously consider before they mark their final ballots here in phase 2, which started last Thursday, as we mentioned, because the Emmy birds were flying outside my window. And ends on August the 30th. God, not September the 30th. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. I've killed myself.
Slapped my body again. Ends on August 30th. So we've got roughly another week of Emmy voting going on. So with that, Joey, why don't you go first and tell us what you would like the Television Academy to consider before they mark their ballot?
Sure. So I have a few. Do you want me to just give all of them, or
let's just do one and then go around?
Sure. So I want the flight attendant to win something. I fear that it is not going to get something. I mean, I was fortunate enough to guest on Matt Neglia's podcast this past week. I don't think it's been released yet of predictions.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. He said something when we talked about best actress in a comedy. He said, I was predicting Kaley Cuoco all season, and then Hacks came out, which is pretty much what I think everybody did. So I don't want the flight attendant to be just a bridesmaid. So of those ones that I think it has like a huge realistic shot of winning, I want Susanna Fogel to win directing of a comedy. I think that it's for the pilot. It's a really tight episode. It's really fun. Really gets you into like the tone and everything. So that's what I want that show to win.
Excellent. I think you're probably going to be pretty happy with that, because I feel like won the DGA. I feel like that's a pretty strong contender. And plus, you know, the front runner, you know, in the comedy series is Ted Lasso, and the comedy race is largely Ted Lasso. But they have multiple nominations in that category,
and that never usually wins.
Yeah.
Like if there's multiple nominations, yeah, that usually never goes over well. So just a little nudge. That's what I'm hoping happens, and I'm probably going to predict happens, but I don't want to count anything out.
All right. Megan.
That's actually a good lead into something I've been thinking. So I do want to say that all of the front runners, like Jean Smart and Jason Sudeikis, and all even Kate Winslet, I think all the front runners are great. And in the actress comedy category, I do want people to seriously consider Kaley Cuoco, even though I know Jean Smart is the front runner. But I just think that I know Kaylee does more of maybe dramatic work on The Flight Attendant, which we've talked about at length on this podcast series. But I just think she is just – her character – is so interesting, and she's really, I think we've never seen her like this before. She's also funny at times. She's quirky, and, you know, when she's trying to sneak out of places she shouldn't be, and she just gives an amazing performance, and I don't know what the Flight Attendant season 2 is going to be like. I kind of wish that this was just, this is the way it existed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but I think that people should seriously consider her because, she's been around for a long time. I mean, she's like what, 35 or something, but, she's been around a long time. She's, been on like one of the probably greatest comedies of all time. Like not necessarily if, even if you don't like it, but she, you know, it's longevity wise and popularity. I just think people should really seriously consider her and how far she's come. And I think this is like one of her peak performances.
Yeah, she's so good. I was watching some of the episodes again and I was just like, I was sort of blown away by her. So
she is great. She is great. And I do almost wish that they had campaigned this in the limited series race because, you know, she has a complicated performance. It's not necessarily comedic, although what she does, you do laugh at some of the things that she does, but it is, there are more dramatic moments, I think, than there are comedic moments. We've talked about this before, as you've mentioned, Megan. Mm-hmm. But you just can't deny Jean Smart giving a career best performance. That's so unfortunate that they're both very talented actresses are doing career best work and that you can't have a tie.
Well, I also want to say that I think that, you know, not even though I'm fine with, like I said, Jean Smart's great. I don't know if I think she's lead in this in Hacks, which is funny, but she also already has an Emmy. So, you know, maybe spread the wealth. I'm all about spreading the wealth. So, you know, give it to Kaley Cuoco, even though, like I said, I'm completely fine with Jean getting it. But if you want to make that argument, I will make that argument.
There's part of me that, because I don't know where season 2 of The Flight Attendant is going to go, part of me wonders, like, since this part of Kaley Cuoco's character's journey, you know, it's not done. It's obviously at a very beginning route of recovery. I don't know where that character is going to go. And if I could sort of guarantee that Kaley Cuoco won for this, I know Jean Smart is going to be fucking incredible no matter what she does. Mm-hmm. In season 2, 3, 4 of Hacks or however long it goes. So if they just wanted to, maybe some people would be like, I know Jean Smart's going to be back again next year. I don't know what The Flight Attendant is going to do. Maybe just vote for Kaley Cuoco. But I do think Jean Smart is fucking brilliant. So like, what the fuck?
Yeah. All right. My first pick, let me see if there's anything. No, we don't really have anything. I mean, I guess the only segue that I could offer is that I do have someone to pick in the comedy race as well. And I would love for people to not get distracted by the number of Ted Lasso nominations in the supporting category and really focus on Brett Goldstein, who gives such a fantastic performance, is that sort of spice that you need in the show, is that, you know, just totally total antithesis of Ted Lasso's character as Roy Kent. He's just fantastic in the show. I don't think the show would be as good if he weren't in it.
He is really good.
And it's not to say that, you know, Brendan Hunt and the other actors aren't, Jeremy Swift and Nick Mohammed, they're not good. And of course they are. They're all good. But if you take any one of them out, I think, you know, the show would be different, but I think it could get largely by. If you take Roy Kent out, I think it's a totally different show. So I would like for people to really seriously consider Brett Goldstein and not get distracted by splitting the votes.
Mm-hmm. That's a great pick. That's really good.
That's a good pick. Well, especially because a lot of people love all the different men of Ted Lasso in completely different ways. So,
That's just,
and that, that character, if not done well or carefully, could be like really intolerable, or a character that you don't want to spend a lot of time with. And he is such like a lovable, angry man.
Yeah. Well, talking about season 2, I mean, his the journey that he takes so over good. Season 2 is mm-hmm. even better than season 1, and maybe that hurts him. Maybe people will be like, or maybe it helps. I don't know. I'm never clear about how current seasons airing during Emmy voting, you know, help or hurt people. Do they not want to vote for him because they're going to vote for him for season 2, or does it push him over the top because he is so great? But he's fantastic in season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really great.
So Joey, back to you, unless you guys want to talk more about Brett Goldstein.
Something that I really want to, oh my God, I just lost it. I want Hamilton to lose every single acting category.
Well, I can co-sign that because one of my other ones was basically anybody but Hamilton. Like,
I'm okay with that too. I mean, I'm fine like with
I'm looking at the. Sorry, Joey, you go first.
Oh no, no,
I'll piggyback.
Oh no, I get so mad at those nominations because I think that. Well, I mean, I've bitched about this before, so I don't have to go into a huge amount of detail. It's just there is something that kind of boggles my mind is that we were all stuck inside for so long. And this was the Emmy ceremony and Emmy nominations or pack of nominations where these nominations could have been incredibly varied. A lot of things in the limited series category could have gotten picked up. Like Callum Scott Howell's For It's a Sin, that's my favorite performance of the year, probably. And just not even in limited series, but in sort of the comedy categories or the drama categories, they were sort of like blind and they just voted for the same show over and over again. And I think that is the worst offender. Still love the show, still like a lot of the music. I need a rest.
Still haven't seen it over here.
And that's fine. Like I love Jonathan Groff and I love Jonathan Groff in that show. I think he is amazing in that show. But every time I see that he's nominated for that, I get mad.
Yeah, he doesn't deserve that. It's a 15-minute performance.
Yeah, and he's great. Like he comes in and he steals the show, but it's like I don't know. So, you know what? Fine. If we're going to do this, Come From Away, which is a musical that I adore, is having a, you know, for Apple TV, they recorded, I think, the cast coming back to rehearsals, I think, after the pandemic was over, but, you know, coming back from it, and they filmed the show. And I think that show is surprisingly very emotional. So all these bitches who, like, were beating the drum for Hamilton, I'm coming back in an obnoxious, overly conscious way about how Come From Away is amazing. So... gird your loins, fuckers.
All right.
That's a promise and a threat.
Well, just to jump in and add to that, I mean, you look at the performances, and I'm mostly focused on the performances. If, you know, I think it would kind of be a crime if Hamilton were to beat Bo Burnham inside, because Burnham's piece is such a unique piece of art that really speaks to COVID and isolation and where we've been over the past year, to have that lose not be rewarded or recognized because people love Hamilton, I feel is a slap in the face to art, essentially. Hamilton has had its time. Hamilton has had its rewards. I'm fully with Joey. It doesn't belong here. It is a recording of the Broadway production. It is not a restaging like Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
So, but I'm looking at the performances and I'm like, okay, people love Lin-Manuel Miranda, Leslie Odom is fantastic in Hamilton, but Ewan McGregor is great in Halston. Hugh Grant's probably doing career best work in The Undoing. Paul Bettany, you know, is very good in WandaVision and is also really great in Uncle Frank, which probably should have been nominated for. And then, you know, you look at, you know, supporting actors. So David Diggs is great. But Evan Peters, career best work, Thomas Brodie Sangster, also really great in Queen's Gambit. And then supporting actress, I love Renee Elise Goldsberry in Hamilton. But Julia Nicholson, fantastic. Like there's all kinds of ways that you could go outside of Hamilton. Just let them have their nominations and be done with it. Let them have their Tonys that they've already won and recognize somebody else. Broaden your horizons, people. That's it. I'm done. Also,
that's great. Yeah, I agree.
I applaud that. Thank you.
So, Megan, I'll let you go since I kind of jumped in.
That's okay. I agree with all of that. I'm going to be controversial, and I'm, like I said, I'm okay with all the front runners, but I'm going to outstanding supporting actress in a drama series. And I know that Gillian Anderson is the front runner, but I think that there are two Handmaids that don't have Emmys that should have Emmys. And one is Yvonne Strahovski. And she's great this season, but there's another, and so I would be fine with her winning, but another one who I think is really the best supporting actress of that show this season is Madeline Brewer, who is so good. And, you know, she's a character who is just like a survivor, and she's really good and has little moments this season where you're like, ugh, like she just does a lot of good things, and she's a great actress. And even back when I remember her on Orange is the New Black. But I think one or the other I would love to see. When, I mean, Samira is great, too. She's won before. Anne Dowd has won before. But the Handmaids are so good. The Handmaids on The Handmaid's Tale are so good. Well, obviously, Yvonne's not a Handmaid. But anyway, like, they need to reward one of them is what I think. So, and Gillian Anderson already has an Emmy. So that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
No, I... at one point, I really should get around to the fourth season.
It's good.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Joey, back to you.
This is something that I've mentioned before, and I know we've talked about, and so I will keep it short. I think Pose needs to win something. I have a feeling that Billy Porter could win again for the final season, but I think that they're doing a really strong job. I think they're doing a really sort of impressive job of campaigning MJ Rodriguez for lead actress in a drama series. Like all the print ads that I've seen, it's just like full page glossy photos of her in the show. And it's like Television Academy, this is your time to make history.
Yeah.
So I just want her to win. I think she's great. She's been great on the show since day one. It would be like a landmark in terms of just representation, but it's not just that. She's just really fucking good. She has been good. She's a really strong actress, and she just released a single. So maybe that'll work out in her favor. So I don't know. I want MJ Rodriguez to win so bad. As much as I love Emma Corrin in The Crown, as much as I love Olivia Colman in The Crown, I heard Elizabeth Moss is fantastic in this next season of The Handmaid's Tale. I just want her to win. Just that.
I was going, actually, that was one of the ones I was thinking about doing, was this category. And I thought, no, Joey will get on his soapbox about it. And I'll let him do that.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I spoiler alert for our predictions episode, I think that she will win. And I think Billy Porter will win. I think it's either going to be the actor and actress. I don't think they'll split. I think they'll go hand in hand. I think people, if you're voting for Emma Corrin, you're going to go, you vote for Josh O'Connor.
Unrecognizable.
And I think if you're going to vote for Billy Porter, you're probably going to vote for Rodriguez. So, and I think there is that sense of making history with this win that's out there.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
I'm predicting the pair of them to win.
I like that.
Too.
Yeah. Megan.
So the last, I only have about three that I came up with, but outstanding writing for a limited or anthology series or movie. I just think that we need to strongly consider Michaela Cole for I May Destroy You. I thought about putting her in actress. She's great as actress. I do think I'd love to see Kate Winslet win, even though she already has one, and that's terrible. But Michaela Cole, the real achievement, I mean, it's the whole thing's achievement, but if you really want to reward the achievement, it's her writing this and, you know, putting this basically true story and out there and, you know, making herself vulnerable and everything. And, you know, this show just goes so many places, and, I just think I applaud her, and I think that's where they should reward her, is her writing. So that's what I think. I love I May Destroy You so much. So, yeah.
Excellent. I have two more. My first remaining is moving beyond sort of the obvious distaste for Netflix's Ratched, and recognizing a really tremendous performance in it, which is Sophie Okonedo, who has the role of a person suffering from multiple personality disorder, and she doesn't make it a gimmick. She makes each of these personalities a fully realized character. She is phenomenal. I honestly think that she is on a completely different level than anybody else in that show. Even Sarah Paulson. She's amazing. And I would really hate to see, I don't think this will happen, but I'd really hate to see sort of the love for the crown go down to Claire Foy winning an Emmy for like 3 minutes of speaking time. It's not even a performance. It's just her reading a speech. Sophie Okonedo, I haven't seen the other performances, so I really shouldn't comment on them, but Sophie Okonedo, I really want the Television Academy just to look at the performance, not the show, look at the performance and realize that it is great on its own.
I will co-sign that. I think the best word that I can use to describe the performance, and I love the performance, sort of prediction wise, I feel like, you know, quote unquote, you know, everything about her winning doesn't make sense, like statistics wise, I guess, even though stats for that category don't really, you know, whatever. But the word that I describe that performance is operatic. She is everywhere in that. And you're right, it is not a gimmick. It's very grounded and it's sad. It's really sad. But it's also really violent and scary. I'm sorry. What was your other one?
You can go ahead if you have another.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had two more. So my last two, well, maybe I'll just do one. My last one is in the category of music supervision, which is really random. Music supervision, I really loved what Bridgerton did, where they took all of those really sort of, you know, contemporary songs and they made them, you know, classical. So it sort of was like, you know, they sort of put us there in a weird way because we recognize the music so much. And I thought that was a really interesting choice. I'm not sure if that is music supervision or if that is more of like orchestrations, but I'm pretty sure it is music supervision, which is by Production and Casting Cinematography and Costumes. Maybe it just is a music composition, but I'm pretty sure it's a music supervision. So that's by, never mind, don't know his name. Oh, Alexandra Patsavis. I think that's one of my favorite things about the show. I'm not really huge on Bridgerton, but of the nominations it got, I think that would be a cool win.
You know, I think that using those pop songs, modern day pop songs, as classical background pieces is kind of brilliant. I think it was really orchestrated very well, and I actually have the. I downloaded the soundtrack to it.
Yeah, me too.
Just so I could hear some of those. But talking about Bridgerton, I don't know that this is necessarily a hear my plea comment, but the category of outstanding period costumes is probably the toughest one of the
entire. That's a good category.
I mean, Bridgerton, Halston, Ratched, The Crown, Queen's Gambit, any one of those in an individual year would walk away with it because I think they're all great, but... Wow. It's like, how do you tell?
Those are all really awesome nominees. Can I say something really quick about the costumes for Bridgerton? I interviewed the costume designers, Ellen Mirajnik and John W. Glazer, who she did the costumes for, I think, Fatal Attraction. They told me, and I may have said this before, but if I didn't say it on the show for listeners, that one of my favorite things was the difference in the colors of the two families. And she said that they modeled the Bridgerton costume color palette after French Macron. So it's like softer more like, I don't want to say Eastery colors, but that's sort of how she described it. But then the other family, who I'm forgetting the other family's name, the one with the scheming mother, they modeled their color palette after like acid fruits, which I thought, as soon as I saw that, I thought that informed so much about the characters. But all that, you're right, all the costumes in this category are fucking insane.
Well, she's brilliant, and she's never been nominated for an Oscar. And think about like all of the projects that she's worked on. I mean, just go look at her IMDb page and just understand what a crime that is. I mean, she did the costumes for the Greatest Showman. I mean, she designed that.
Oh, that's right. I told her that at the top of the call. I was like, I told her that I was mad that she didn't get nominated for an Oscar because that was like a shoo-in nominee.
I 100% agree, and I don't understand why she's never been nominated. And she's incredibly popular. She works all the time, and she's brilliant. I mean, anyway, I don't know. I don't understand it.
But I will say, with specifically that category, we at the site, we have interviewed everybody in that category, which I think is actually kind of impressive. So actually, Shadon interviewed the costume designer for Halston, and I think I did the other one. I did the other four because I'm obsessed with costumes, and I basically swiped them from people. But I'm like, it's mine. No, I'm so sorry. None of the costume people are available. They're mine.
That's true, because I usually know, I'm not going to take this because I know he wants it. So
yeah,
there you go.
So check out our interviews. Yay.
Yes. And so my last one is another tough category, I would argue, is outstanding documentary or nonfiction special. And these five, I mean, Boy State, Framing Britney Spears, The Bee Gees, Social Dilemma, Tina. I've seen four of the five, and I've heard great things about Boy State. It's just very political, and I don't want to get triggered.
Very stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine. I do want to advocate, though, for the Tina documentary, because it is a brilliant piece of work. You understand layers about this woman that you think you know from What's Love Got to Do with It and from her decades in the public eye. You learn so much about this woman. I learned so much about this woman that I didn't know before. I mean, Social Dilemma is great. Bee Gees is great. Framing Britney Spears, you kind of almost want to predict it because it is such a hot button topic right now. It's a fine documentary, but
it's very surface level, I think.
It is incredibly surface level. Thank you for saying that. It does not dive into what I think is the most interesting aspect of it, which is, why are these people so obsessed with her getting her conservatorship revoked? But anyway, Tina, please, please check that out. It is a brilliant piece of art. Cool. Anything else? TV Academy, please.
Please don't check everything off. Please.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Yeah.
That's all.
Excellent. That's all. All right. So let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Joey, you can go first.
Pass.
No. Oh, nothing coming
again.
Okay. I know what I want. Okay. So I have screeners for Lula Rich that four-part documentary docuseries about the unraveling of LuLaRoe. And so I think it sounds really good. Is there somebody outside? Why is it here? Am I breathing?
Are you out of breath?
No.
How is that coming about?
I did have my hand on my mouth for a second. So. But my door has been open this entire time.
Anyway, I have screeners for that, which I would really like to have time to watch because I have not had time to watch anything. I need to finish Dave, which I heard that its season finale kind of pulls everything together, which I would need to see that. I have another movie to watch. I believe it is Queen Pins. Yes, with Kristen. Is it Kristen Bell in that? Wait, no. Is this the wrong one I have?
Okay. I thought it was a different movie, but I do want to see that too.
Yes. It's Kristen Bell and Vince Vaughn is in it. And it's like two housewives create a $40 million coupon scam.
Oh, yeah.
Which sounds fun. And Kirby Halt Baptiste is in it too. So yeah, that's hopefully I'll get to watch that this week. And that is about it.
Joe, are you ready?
Yeah, I think so. So I'm finishing up, what's the name of the book? Nine Perfect Strangers. I listened to a big chunk of it when I was driving back from Pittsburgh. I'm actually not sure how I feel about the book. I am excited to jump into the show because I've seen a lot of really interesting reactions from people, and I was like, all right, I need to watch the show. So I'm going to finish up that, and then I'm starting a book called After Parties, which is a short story collection by Anthony Vizneso, which is continuing my queer book journey of 2021. But I did find out that he actually is no longer around. He passed away last year. I think he OD'd on drugs or something. It was like, because I heard about how many people really love the book, and it was just released, I think, last year, because I just got, it's a hardcover book. And then I read a really sad like essay from his boyfriend who like detailed their first date and how he didn't think he was going to like him. I'm excited to read that. I need to finish Miracle Workers. I still think the season is really good. Miracle Workers, Oregon Trail. I also want to watch Lula Rich, and I need to finish, the other two, which I mentioned last week, but it comes out on Thursday, and I actually don't know if they're dropping the whole season or just like a couple of episodes, but I like need that show in my soul. Like I feel it, like I need that show so much, and I'm a little scared because it's been like 2 years since that show aired, but I'm really, really excited. Another example of people online, like every single minute of every single episode, they're like, I'm like, shut up, sit down, shut up. Yes, it is wonderful and it is great, and your opinion is very valid, and I'm glad you like it and you don't hate it, but please shut up. That's it.
All right. I, too, am looking forward to the other two. The return of American Horror Story, which I don't know if either of you have watched the double feature trailer. It is called American Horror Story Double Feature.
It looks good.
Yeah, it actually does. It looks like a return to form. And I'm cautiously optimistic because I've been burnt before, but it doesn't look like complete camp crap. It actually looks like there's a story, and it looks like you know, it may be. So, I mean, there is, you know, what's her name? Frances Conroy is in it, and she does look campy, but it's okay. One piece of it, otherwise it looks very good. It looks very different. So the first half of the season, this double feature means one half of the season is one story. The second half of the season, I think, is another story, and then they'll eventually tie in together. Seems ambitious. We'll see. But I'm anxious to get back into American Horror Story after a very long hiatus. Yes. Did you have something, Joy?
Something I think is really interesting, when they released the teaser trailer of it, that was like an animated, not animated, but it was like a lot of weird visual effects of like
CG,
like an alien and like a mer person or something. I was like, what the fuck is this? And then the trailer came out, and I thought the trailer was like, oh, I actually want to watch that. Yeah. And now I'm a little bit fascinated. I was like, how does that tie into that? I have no idea.
Yeah, and it's got something to do with who's the central? It's got Lily Rabb. She's almost like in a Wendy Torrance type role. Who's the writer? Who is the star? Is it?
Finn Wittrock.
Finn Wittrock. Okay, so he's her husband, I guess, and he's a writer. So he's got a little Jack Torrance thing going on there, and Macaulay Culkin is in it. I don't know. We'll see. In the movie world, there is something that is incredibly superficial coming out, I'm sure. And I just showed my daughter the original version of this, but there is a remake of She's All That coming out on Netflix.
Yes.
Called He's All That. And I can't wait to watch it because I can't wait to see what they're going to do to make this perfectly woke and to be completely inclusive.
I would mind watching that too, to be honest. That's a good call. I thought about saying that, but I'm like, am I going to get laughed at?
I don't care. I'm not thinking it's going to be great, but I am almost rapidly anticipating it because I think it's just going to be big, stupid fun, and I will howl at it, I'm sure. And I'm going to be wrapping up my audiobook, The Guest List, which I've been talking about for a couple of weeks now, but I'm finally finishing it.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's really good. So does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3M's contributors, Megan McLaughlin, Joey Moser, and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to read us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant and apparently windy tomorrow.